Hello, welcome to the Gab and Jules show. No Gab today. This is his week to be off, to be on holidays after my week last week.
Just holidays all the time for you, too, isn't it?
I wish it was. We've got Stu Robson here stepping in to replace Gab for today's edition. We've got big shows, too, because a lot of things happen in Europe, also internationally, in football this weekend. We've got stuff in La Liga, in the Bundesliga, in Ligue 1, in Italy as well, where the title race is really getting more and more exciting. But there's really one place to start. It's in Manchester for the Man City Tottenham game on Saturday evening in the Premier League. What an incredible spectacle, really. Maybe a turning point in the season for the title race, of course, but also for the race for fourth place. And we have to start there, giving, I guess, a big congratulations to the winners, to Tottenham Hotspur and Antonio Conte for pretty much a masterclass, would you say, tactically, and the way they approached the game and they delivered it?
Well, when I saw the lineups and I saw how they were going to start the game, and it was a back five almost and four in midfield with Harry Kane up front by himself, obviously, I'm not sure how Spurs are going to get out here, because he was asking Kulusevski to come back and double up with his fullback or his wing back. He was asking Son to do exactly the same on the other side of the field. And I just assumed that Manchester City would dominate possession, eventually create chance after chance and would win the game comfortably. And having seen Spurs defend over the last couple of games, I thought that they wouldn't defend well as a back three. Dyer coming back into the side made them slightly stronger. But it was the way they counterattacked that really surprised me. I thought they were brilliant on the counterattack, and they didn't have that many chances to counterattack, but every time they did, they almost created a chance out of it. So yes, Antonio Conte got his tactics spot on.
The game plan. I guess when you score that early as well with the Kane
that always helps.
For Son and Kulusevski, because then your game plan, you put even more pressure on the opposition that have to even try to force something to happen more, and you're far more comfortable maybe. There was a lot of pressure on Harry Kane, of course, because it was the first time he was playing City since the summer, and the transfer that never happened, that looked like it could happen, but in the end maybe looked like it could never happen. And now all this week we're talking about, could he still go? What would have happened if he'd gone? All of that. For him to put on a performance like this, even if maybe City were being naive in the way that they defended on him, because we all knew he was going to drop a lot. And every time he dropped, as you mentioned, there was still a lot of freedom for him to do so. But yet, for him to put on a performance like this is pretty incredible.
But he did everything right. Even when balls were being played from back to front. You know, I've seen him over the last few weeks and he's been out-jumped. He's been out-muscled at times. He looked half-paced on certain occasions. Against Man City, he won balls in the air, he was chesting balls down, he was holding off challenges, he looked quick, you know, he was finding the right pass. He looked like a world beater in that game against Man City. And it just shows you what confidence can do, because he played with great confidence. When he isn't playing with great confidence, because the crowd might be having a bit of a go at him, there's speculation about his move to Manchester City, he looked half-paced. Against Man City on Saturday, I thought he was absolutely magnificent, as were Kulusevski and Son, who had to make the runs beyond him at times. And Son's pass for the first goal showed great vision, didn't it?
Yeah, really great vision. I mean, that reverse pass from Kane to start it was fantastic. There's the goal that he scored that was disallowed for the slight offside for Kulusevski, which was the right call, but it could have been an even better afternoon for
Kane. He showed good pace again when he took that touch, and the goalkeeper, Edison, made a great save with his foot. So every time they went forward, every time Kane got on the ball, he looked as though he was going to cause a problem for City.
We will talk a bit about the City defensive weaknesses, let's put it that way. But obviously, that win, maybe unexpected considering, as we were saying, that Spurs had lost the last three games in the Premier League, that it looked like it could be fourth, which had never happened in Conte's experience as a manager. That obviously means that Liverpool winning against Norwich means that they're back 6 points behind City with a game in hand that will play against Leeds in midweek this week. So potentially 3 points. The title race is wide open, or you still think that 3 points lead cushion for City is still big enough?
It just puts a doubt in Pep Guardiola and Man City's mind, because Liverpool don't look as though they're going to lose games at the moment. I know they were 1-0 down against Norwich, but they were always going to get back into the game when you look at the game and the chances. And it just puts a doubt in Man City's mind, because they were coasting. You know, he was able to rotate his team and not worry about too much about sometimes the side he picks, because the players that were coming in were always going to win the games in the Premier League. But that is a major blow for, I think, for Pep Guardiola. You know, they had that brilliant result in midweek in the Champions League.
Yeah,
and suddenly, against a Spurs side that had lost, as you mentioned, could have lost three on the trot. They I didn't think they played particularly well in the Brighton game, in the FA Cup.
They
lost against Wolves. They lost against Southampton and defended really poorly. I thought this was going to be a tanking for Spurs, and Man City were going to run away with it. But it certainly does put a different angle on the title race.
City hadn't lost since October. I think it was something like that in the league. I think it was 15 games. And at times, I was at the stadium, it felt like, okay, they're going to score now. Mm. And they went back to 1-1 and then went back to 2-2 with Amare's goal. And then you think, okay, you must be happy with the point because you almost took nothing.
Mm.
Now you're a point. And then it's almost stupid that they switched off completely.
Yeah.
Or maybe they were a bit naive again. We go back to naivety, trying to think that they could score the third one. There was, I think, 3 or 4 minutes left to go, and then get caught for the Spurs third goal.
I mean, everybody, you know, when you're watching the game and they get the penalty, Mahrez scores it, you expect Manchester City to get the ball back, Spurs to defend deep and hang on for a draw.
Yeah.
But Spurs in the game show that they can counter-attack at will almost when they did get good possession. And Man City throughout the game, I don't think, defended very well, whether it be on the counter-attack or defending balls into their box. The recovery runs from their midfield players weren't good enough. The decision making of the two centre halves at times was poor. And if you look at that first goal, when they were, it wasn't Spurs didn't win the ball back. That came from the goalkeeper rolling the ball out,
exactly.
And they switched the play out to one side of the field. They played it into Harry Kane, and suddenly Diaz is 1v1 against Son and tries to play him offside and gets square. So that's poor defending, poor decision making. You know, and why was he left 1v1 in such a big area? Where was the other centre half?
Yeah.
Laporte should have been round on the cover so that if one centre half gets beaten, the next one doesn't. So there was lots of things wrong with Man City's defending over the game.
I saw Emeric Laporte after the game for French TV in the flash interview. And I didn't want to trick him or anything or upset him.
Mm.
And I said to him, you know what went wrong defensively? You made a mistake on all of the three goals.
Mm.
So the Diaz that you explained earlier, just trying to play the offside and played it wrong. The second goal, there's a mistake between Diaz and Walker. They both go for the ball.
Yep.
Then Kane plays it to Son, and then Son crosses and no one follows Kane, runs. And then the third one, obviously Walker, I don't know what he's doing on the Kulusevski cross, doesn't even know Kane is behind him, doesn't even jump, and it's an easy header for Kane. And Laporte got really upset, and he goes like, oh, you know, 95% of the goal you concede are on a defensive mistake. I was like, okay, dude, but you don't have to make them anyway. So, you know, it's not, of course, it helps if someone makes a mistake, then the opposition is going to score. That makes life easier for them. But you don't have to make those mistakes. This is unlike City's mistakes that we've seen in that game against Spurs. Mm.
Because Man City's defensive strategy is that they press the ball high up the field and they defend well and the opposition defend deeply so that when they try and play out, they can't, and Man City get good possession. So quite often, Laporte, Walker, Diaz don't really have to make decisions.
Yeah,
everything's in front of
them. Not being that position, you mean? Yeah.
They can see everything, and the opposition can't cause them too many problems. So there's not that many decisions they have to make. They're usually just picking up balls and playing again. In the game against Spurs, because Spurs counter-attacked brilliantly and Man City's midfield didn't recover quickly enough, didn't win the knockdowns and got played around.
Second world,
Now, Diaz, Laporte, Walker all have to make big decisions. And they made the wrong decisions on too many occasions. They were lacking concentration, made bad decisions. We talked about Diaz, you talked about Walker, and Diaz getting in a bit of a muddle. You know, and that's because they're not experiencing those sort of problems very often.
Yeah.
Because most of the work they do is picking up little knockdowns because the front players of Man City and the midfield players of Man City defend so well in front of them.
Yeah.
And the opposition haven't got that much sort of, and you know, they don't fancy themselves going forward. So they don't have to defend very much. In that game against Spurs, what they did have to do, they didn't do very well.
And then I guess it's a good link to Pep's tactics, because I was very surprised to see Gundogan and Rodri starting together, almost as a double pivot. I know Gundogan plays a bit more between the line and he's a bit more creative. Okay, I get that, and he scored a goal, the rebound from the Lloris mistake. But we all knew what Spurs were going to do. They were only going to do one thing, was very solid, very compact, 5-4-1 or 4-5-1, whatever you want, and then having Kane dropping and the two wild players, mm. Son or Lucas or Son and Kulusevski or Son and Bergwijn, whoever mm. Conte was going to pick, mm. making those runs because Kane is so good at almost at playing as a 10 mm. as well as a 9, mm. right? So if you want to double pivot, at least play Fernandinho and Rodri and make sure that Kane has no space to yep. turn, no space to take an easy control or anything like this. But Rodri and Gundogan, I was like, mm. right, that means Mahrez on the bench when he's technically your best player, when he puts a lot of good crosses in and you knew
it. Well, so when he came on, Mahrez exactly. was going to cause problems.
So yeah. I was like, I was very surprised. Mm. And I guess maybe Pep got it wrong with the Gundogan, Rodri kind of...
Yeah, because they didn't have so much influence in the attacking areas. And I thought neither of them defended particularly well. Yeah. You know, they didn't stop Kane coming off and picking up the ball. They didn't go with runners when people ran beyond them at times. They didn't press the ball very well. And their recovery runs weren't good. But he also go back to Pep Guardiola and how he could leave Diaz, because he was getting Walker to push high up onto yeah. onto the wing-back of Spurs, which left Diaz up against Song. Mm. And if you're going to do that, Diaz has to drop off. He has to realise that the only way Son's going to cause him problems is by running in behind him, as he did for the first goal, and he did it on two or three occasions. Yeah. Diaz has to see the danger. You know, Kane's going to get the ball, he's going to whip it round the corner, I've got to be 5 yards deeper.
Yeah.
If it goes into Son's feet, I can go and close him down and not let him get turned.
Or play the offside better.
Yeah. But it's a massive gamble, 1v1, yeah. trying to play offside when Harry Kane's going to play that ball first time round the corner.
No.
So, yeah, I think you're right. Pep Guardiola probably would... say that he probably picked the wrong side in terms of the midfield players, but also the way that they went about coping with Song. Not so much Harry Kane, but coping with Song. They should never have left Diaz 1v1 and try and play him offside.
Because we saw against Liverpool, if you remember, at the Tottenham mm. Stadium, playing with only Son and Kane up front
yeah.
and have an extra midfielder
yeah.
in midfield. And that worked well, you know, even if Liverpool came back really strongly mm. in that game. But that worked and they had a lot of chances and they probably should have scored more goals. In this game, he went for the three up front with Kulusevski, mm. who had to do a lot of work defensively as well, yeah. who looked shattered, by the way. Yeah. I really thought when Lucas came on, yeah. I thought it was going to be for Kulusevski, yeah. not for Son.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, Kulusevski in the 93rd minute still put a good cross in for the winning goal. But again, we go back to Conte's tactics. He could have easily gone with a 3-5-2, for example,
yeah, yeah.
like against Liverpool, and do the same tactics, but just having Kane and Son a bit closer to each other. Instead, he made the pitch really wide, a lot of width, which really troubled City because, as you said, it meant Diaz and and Laporte had a huge gap between them.
So Man City, he made Man City think about it. Do the fullbacks stay and mark Song and Kulusevski, or do they push on and, yeah. and press Tottenham higher up the field, and the two centre-halves come and try and deal with them when in wide areas? Well, that's exactly what Tottenham wanted.
Yeah.
The two centre-halves to come out and defend in wide areas, because Kulusevski, I don't think, is blessed with great pace. But he's a player that can go past people in 1v1 situations. And remember, he was just offside for another goal that Spurs scored, a disallowed one. Mm. So that switch of play caused Man City problems in the yeah. second half. And I'm pleased for Kulusevski, because I don't think he was given a fair crack of the whip at Juventus, because, you know, whatever happened, he's played in several different positions. Allegri didn't really give him that much of a chance. Pirlo didn't really give him that much of a chance. He was always in and out the side. Hopefully at Spurs he's found a home.
Yeah. Conte, who, by the way, remember when he was at Chelsea, beat Pep twice.
Yes.
With a back five as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Playing a lot similar to what we saw on Saturday. Yeah, yeah.
Diego Costa was playing up front in that game, or if I remember rightly.
He won the tactic. He won the battle right against Pep once again in that game. Mm. We give that to Conte.
Yeah, Conte is a top class manager. No question about it.
On the back of a week where there was a lot of tension around Conte, remember he made that interview with Sky Italia, which I think some of the quotes were translated in a very English way. Let's put it that way, a very tabloid way here, that created tension in his press conference on Friday. We saw that the way he reacted, the fact that Spurs don't want him to do an interview with Italian media anymore, so there's not this problem of he speaks in Italian, so we take it, translate it into English a bit the way we want, and turn what he says a bit the way we want. And on the back of the three defeats, and for him to, I think, to react like this, he deserves, I think, a lot of credit. There was something, as Laporte said in my interview after the game, he said about time wasting, he said, they got really frustrated.
Yeah.
Even if now they're trying to distance themselves from it, being there, I promise you, the crowd got really frustrated. You know, there was the old tricks of, I do my laces,
yeah.
or I'm about to take the free kick or goal kick, and then I swap and Lloris comes all the way from the goal to take it, you know, that kind of stuff. And Laporte said, oh, they've done this for years, blah, blah. It's part of the game, right? I can understand why you're frustrated if you're on your losing side.
But I never think it works. Because
don't you?
No, I don't. When teams sideways, I think you're going to have to concentrate for even long. Because the referee, keeps stopping his watch. So the game's going to go for 96,
but don't
97.
You break the momentum of the other team by doing it?
Not always. I think you put pressure on yourself because it's whipping up the crowd. The crowd, as you say, and now they're getting on Tottenham's back. They're getting onto the referee. So there's a feeling that you're desperate for your team to win, so you get right behind your team. And when you're hanging on to a lead, sometimes the longer the game goes on, the less chance you've got of hanging on to it because you've got to keep your concentration, you've got to keep your focus. And I felt the longer that was going on, the more time wasting Spurs were going to do, the worse it was going to be for them. And eventually Man City would score, at which they got the penalty. That's going to be it. What I didn't expect was then Tottenham's going to score a third.
That was crazy.
Because I didn't think they'd have the energy to go and score the third.
That was crazy. Let's just go back to the title race for a little bit. If Liverpool beat Leeds in midweek, they will come back 3 points behind City. Mm-hmm. So this defeat against Spurs could be a huge turning point, or certainly bring back the title race a bit more alive, let's say. April the 9th or 10th, I don't think we know yet when the game is going to be played, Saturday or Sunday, will be at the Etihad, City against Liverpool, which could well be the final of the season, pretty much. There will still be a few more games to play after that, but if there's still only 3 points between them and Liverpool win it and come back level on points, this would be crazy. If City win it and they go 6 points clear, you think they're not going to catch them at all. So with this in mind, Stu, what do you think, where is your money on? What do you think the momentum is now? Is this a big deal, that defeat from City, or psychologically you think they can cope easily with it and they go to Everton next weekend?
Yeah. If you're talking about percentage, Manchester City would probably be 70% chance of winning the title.
70-30.
Yeah, 70-30, Liverpool 30%. But before the game, I'd have said it was 95.5% Man City would win the title. It puts a doubt in Man City's mind. Mm. Liverpool gives them encouragement. You know, they think they can fight for everything now. They're still in the title race. They're looking forward to that game against Man City. Yeah. They've got a squad now that they can rotate Liverpool when somebody gets injured. You know, you've seen Diaz come and play really well. You know, Jota came in for Firmino, last time, a couple of a season ago, and he's scoring goals. And then when he's out, Firmino came in like he did against Inter when Jota went out the side. Yeah. They've got three or four centre halves now. You know, Joe Gomez came back into the side. So they've got a lot more players in midfield. They've got a bigger squad. They're doing well in the Champions League. I think they've got every chance of making a real good fight of it against Man City.
I think for me, it's even more maybe 60-40, to be fair, because I know that game is at the Etihad, but we've seen City at the Etihad against Palace when they lost. Yeah. Obviously, against Spurs, Liverpool play very differently and they're going to go and attack them, and it's going to be a very different tactical battle. But I think 60-40 now, which is very exciting for us, because as you said, for a long time, they were so clear ahead that we thought, okay, they're going to walk with the title. And instead, they might start feeling the pressure now.
Yeah, absolutely. And they didn't handle the pressure very well against Spurs when they were down, because they kept on being counter-attacked. And Liverpool, I think, will play, you say they play differently than Spurs. They might play a bit higher up the field, but they'll certainly play counter-attacking football.
Yeah, that's true.
And they'll want to do exactly the same and leave Mane or Diaz.
I just don't think City will have 90% of the ball possession like they had at the start of the second half against Spurs.
But they'll still be a threat on the counter-attack. Liverpool will almost hope that Man City have quite a bit of the ball, win it back in better areas than Spurs did,
higher up in
midfield, and then the runs of Salah and Mane or Jota or whoever's playing in the side, Diaz if he's playing on that left hand side, will cause Man City problems.
No, you're right. What about the race for fourth? Because also that could be a turning point, in the sense, not so much if Spurs had lost or drawn on Saturday, they would still be in the mix pretty much. They've got three games in hand like Arsenal, but United won on Sunday, West Ham dropped 2 points, Wolves won on Sunday as well, so that fourth place race between United, West Ham, Arsenal, Spurs and Wolves, I guess we have to include Wolves in it now as well, because they also have game in hands. It's pretty exciting too. What do you see, how do you see it going. Do you still think like me that Arsenal right now look like
I said on FC that Arsenal seem to be the team that are in the best position at the moment. You know, they've done it quite quietly. Yeah. They're getting results, even if they're not playing at their very best. They're still getting results at the moment. It was a great win at Wolves.
Yeah,
you know, really I think they were outplayed for some period of the game and they rode their luck on occasions and Wolves didn't take their chances. But Arsenal, at the moment, look a threat when they're on the ball, when they're counter-attacking at pace, when they've got people running with the ball. They've got players that can dribble with the ball now.
Yeah,
they're defending a lot better. They look better organised. And everybody's talking about the problems of Manchester United and Antonio Conte, his problems at Spurs up until this last game.
Yeah.
West Ham, you think, are always going to come down. Arsenal are the one team that seem to be on the up at the moment. So I would say they're favourites to get into the fourth spot.
Yeah, I think so too, although they will have to go to Spurs, of course. They host United, so there will still be some big games. Mm. There's a West Ham Wolves next weekend. There's Arsenal Wolves.
I think it will change from week to week.
I think there was a point 10 days ago where it felt like no one wanted that fourth place. They all dropped points. Arsenal drew 0-0 against, I can't remember who it was, dropping points at home. United dropping points, always taking the lead and then getting paid back by Southampton, by Burnley, all of that. West Ham the same. But I think if they all picked up forms and they all start playing better, we saw United being good against Leeds, Wolves were okay against Leicester and still won. I think it could make a very, very interesting end of the season or second half of the season for the title, for fourth place, maybe even then for Europa League places, Europa Conference League, whatever. And then at the bottom as well, like we will see in the...
What you'd like to see is all those teams play well, so it's a fight for for the fourth place rather than teams dropping out of it, you know, and somebody get in there by mistake. So I think it's going to be a great race for the fourth place.
I think so. Just one last thing on this. Where do you stand in terms of games in hand? Because obviously you look at games in hand, you think, okay, potentially this is 3 points, 6 points, 9 points. A lot of coaches or players or former players like you or former coaches say like, well, you don't have the points until you have them, until they're there, you can see them in the table. Yeah. Is it as simple as saying, okay, they've got three games in hand, that's 9 points, they will be fourth or third?
No, I think you have to go about two-thirds of the points. That's why I always look at it. You know, it wasn't so long ago we were saying, look at Spurs. They've got three games in hand. Well, they lost to Wolves and Southampton. Yeah. You know, and they were the team that were in pole position because if they won all their games, they'd be 4 points clear of all the others. But when you look at Arsenal, I think they could probably win two out the next three games, which would take them into a full spot. So you can't look at the maximum. That's what you don't do. You don't say, look, the three games in hand, they're going to get 9 points. I would say for Arsenal at the moment, six out of nine would be good.
Yeah.
And the same for any teams that have got games in hand. Look to win two out of the three of them.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right, enough City Spurs. Stu, what about some quick hits?
Let's go, Jules.
Yeah, so Aubameyang scores his first hat-trick for Barcelona away at Valencia. Should have only been a brace, really, Robbo. We know that. But have you been impressed by Aubameyang's performance and Barca's overall?
First half, Barcelona were excellent. I thought their football was really good. Yeah, the combination play. Aubameyang gave them something else. Mm. That running behind, the first goal he scored was a great running. I mean, poor defending.
But if you bought the last in Valencia, why did you play such a high line? You know that's the really good
Jordi Alba's got loads of time on the ball to pick out a pass. The one centre-half was out the game because he'd gone into midfield to mark Ferran Torres.
Yeah.
The other centre-half was marking on the wrong side of Aubameyang. But the thing that impressed me about Aubameyang's, not just the run, the finish was excellent, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He thought about hitting it with his lace, and at the last minute, he just chose to use the inside of his foot and bend it into the corner. He tired in the second half, probably because he hasn't had that much football over the last few weeks. But I thought his first half performance, his understanding with the other players was really good. And Barcelona played well in the game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that goal from De Jong, the you know, one-touch pass from Busquets to Alba
to over the top.
Dembele to De Jong.
Because that took a lot of skill and vision from Dembele to get Dembele it on the half volley, to play it back to De Jong, to make the forward run, to get into the box. No, it was all good.
I agree with you.
Now, 4 days after dominating Real Madrid in the Champions League, PSG managed to lose away at Nantes in Liga and were 3-0 down at halftime. Jules, what's going on?
You know what? It was one of the. It was an amazing game, really. I mean, not so much if you're a PSG fan like me, but overall, it was great because the atmosphere at La Beaujoire was fantastic. Nantes have been playing really well. They were eighth before this game. They're fifth now in the table. They're in the semi-final of the French Cup. They're doing well. They play really well on the counter-attack. Moses Simon is really good. Colomwani is very good. Blas is very good. So you knew before they had the weapons to hurt PSG, and especially a PSG team that usually struggles on the league game after the Champions League. They lost the previous, the only loss they had before that game in Ligue 1 was against Rennes. It was 4 days after the City win in the group stage at the Parc des Princes.
Do you think that's because in the Champions League they have to play at a pace which they aren't used to when they're playing in Ligue 1? So then they're tired from that game.
Or maybe I think psychologically after such a big win, Real Madrid City, maybe even without really realising it, you maybe switched off a little bit. I didn't look about English clubs, but French clubs, apart from Rennes, even the one in the Europa League, Lille as well struggled always after the Champions League, after the Champions League game. So maybe it's a French thing, but Nantes were super clinical, super efficient in what they had to do. Perfect. They had Alban Lafont in goal, who was incredible. L'Equipe gave him 10 out of 10 in their ratings, which is, I think, only the 13th time in history to get, because he stopped the Neymar penalty, which was a bad penalty, but still, everything that they, every shot apart from the Neymar goal that the PSG players took at him, he saved. It was unreal. And then, you know, it's one of those where I don't think PSG played that badly in the second half, especially they could have come back. But Lafont and Nantes were just, it was just one of those nights, you know, when everything goes your way.
Yeah, great night for the home
side. Exactly. Manchester United gave away another Leeds, Robbo. That's what they do at Leeds this time. But hey, they came back and won the game. You know, they managed to win the game. And Ralf Rangnick, I guess, deserves a lot of credit for his coaching. He brought on Fred and Elanga, and both of them scored the winning goals.
Yeah, I don't think he brought Fred on to go and, or expect him to go and make an overlapping run and smash it into the to the near post, because he brought him on when Leeds were dominating the midfield, when it was becoming a really fierce battle. Pogba had a decent first half.
Played well.
And then I think he thought he was tiring, so he wanted more legs, so he got Fred onto the field, and Fred did both sides of the job. He won the ball back and played the ball, and then went on an overlapping run, scored a great goal. And I think it was an obvious choice that Lingard was tiring as well. He hasn't started many games for Manchester United over the last few years. And Elanga came on, who I think's done quite well when he's played, and he scored the goal. So yeah, give credit to Rangnick. He got his tactics right at the start of the game. They had a problem after halftime because Leeds stepped up and pressed much higher and showed a great more appetite. Suddenly, tackles were coming flying in. The referee was letting things go. But he got it all balanced again, and Manchester United deserved to win in the end, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought the same. There was an incident with Robin Koch and the concussion. I don't know if you were concussed when you were playing. I don't know how you felt. To me, watching on television, it was on television and I'm not a doctor, he didn't look well at all. He didn't look like he could continue to play the game like they did after.
I can only talk from my own experience. Once I got concussed and had to come off and can't remember anything about it and was stretched off. Another time, it was in the first game of the season against Arsenal versus Chelsea, and I took a whack off Nigel Spackman on the side of the head, and I played on and couldn't remember.
Could you see double or something?
It was buzzing. I can't remember anything of the game.
Really?
You know, I looked in the second half. I looked up at the clock and thought, "Well, where's the rest of the game gone?" So, it's not a good situation. And it was obvious to you, I, everybody in the crowd, anybody watching on television, there was something wrong with Cole, and he should have been taken off immediately. And he wasn't, and that could damage somebody for that period of time he was still on the field.
And we go back again to protocols and actually putting something in place, a plan in case you know, these incidents happening again, because, you know, that could damage the players' well, you know, health and everything.
Now, not long ago, Bayern are the FC Hollywood again, yes. Tension at the club and issues on the pitch, Jules.
So, okay, they won against Greuther Fürth at the weekend, despite being 1-0 down at halftime, by the way. That's against the promoted team, bottom of the table team, and not playing well at all in the first half. And then Lewandowski and all the others put things right. They won, but they were not good against Salzburg and were lucky to get a draw in the end. They lost to Bochum, of course, the weekend before, quite badly. Now there's tension between Oliver Kahn and Uli Hoeneß and Salihamidzic and Mataos. And Mataos is very critical. And Salihamidzic, who is the sporting director, saying, like, what has Mataos done for this club? Well, he won pretty much everything with Bayern Munich. So it was just like, this is where everything looked good at some point. Nagelsmann was great and they were playing great. And now suddenly it's all crazy again, where we question Nagelsmann.
Everybody's fighting for power, aren't they?
Yeah, I guess so. There's that. Is Nagelsmann right to go with that back three and playing all of Gnabry, Coman, Sané, Lewandowski and Müller all together? That's another question. So I don't know. It's very interesting times. You know, it's a shame, I guess, that Dortmund are not a bit closer in the title race. It's a shame that they play Salzburg, because I think in the home tie, they're going to smash them and qualify for the quarterfinals. But it's always fun when Bayern are FC Hollywood.
Yeah, you don't want Bayern Munich winning every game, do you?
Exactly.
You want to have an off day every so often.
One of the surprising results of the weekend, Stu, is Inter's defeat at home to Sassuolo. I mean, what's going on now? They used to be well at the top of Serie A, and now they let that slip.
Well, you were talking about PSG struggling after a Champions League game. Well, I did the Inter versus Liverpool game, and I felt as though Liverpool, if you did a heart rate monitor of the Liverpool players, there'd have been about 160 for much of the game. If you put a heart rate monitor on the Inter players, it'd have been about 180, 190, because they were having to play at their maximum to stay in the game. And they played quite well in the second half. And I just felt as though Inter put so much effort into that game, they were going to be shattered for this game. Yeah. And they still created chances. I still don't think that Sanchez playing up front with Lautaro is a great combination, I think. And with Dzeko, you know, he scored his goals and he's looked okay, but he's just struggling for a bit of energy at the moment.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
So there's one or two things that are going on. I still think they're a good side. I still think they are favourites to win Serie A.
Okay.
And they're just having an off time at the moment. You know, they totally outplayed AC Milan when they lost the game 2-1. Giroud scored one great goal. And the Napoli game, I think, was fairly even. They played quite well against Liverpool. This is the game they didn't play quite so well.
And Sassuolo, you know, that they won in Turin against Juventus and twice in Milan against Inter.
And on their day, they play some good football and they can outpass people. So they're a dangerous side.
Yeah.
Now, Real Madrid put the PSG disappointment behind them with a win in La Liga against Alaves. Normal service resumed, Jules?
Alaves are not very good, Stu, as you know. Nope. They're second from bottom of the table. In the end, Benzema, who was not fully fit against PSG, we know that, was too good for them. The penalty, two assists. I mean, the Asensio goal is wonderful. And then the other assist for Vinicius.
The combination play,
wonderful. So they had to win. I think Carlo was a bit under pressure and there was a lot of discontent after the PSG performance and the way they played, the way they set up in that game in Paris. So now I think they brought a bit of serenity and they can prepare for the second leg a bit better.
Will they win that second leg?
No way! Give me a break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Liverpool got a scare after going a goal down against Norwich at home, but the stars stepped up and we even saw the first goal for Luis Diaz. Everything is good then.
It was good. I mean, yes, they had a scare to start with and Norwich played quite well. They created one or two chances, but you always thought that Liverpool would get back into the game. And when Diaz came on, he played really well, as he has done whenever he's played for Liverpool at the moment. He looks like he can go past people. He looks confident. He looks like he can run with the ball. His movement off the ball is not as good as Mane, but he's actually been better on the ball than Mane.
Yeah,
it's a good combination. So when Mane's not playing well or has to come off, Diaz can certainly fill in for him. It's a good combination.
It is.
Now, another Luis had a special moment this weekend, Jules, and that's Luis Suarez.
Oh, yeah.
What a goal against Osasuna.
Oh, wow. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. I think it's corner for Osasuna. The ball falls to João Félix on the edge of the Atletico box, and then he, very quick thinking, long ball towards to Suarez, and then the goalkeeper of Osasuna obviously had come up because it was a corner for his team. And then Suarez lobs him. Is that what you say in English? Yeah, chips him before 40 yards with his left foot.
I wouldn't say it was lob because he didn't go over the top of the goalkeeper. He actually bent it round the goalkeeper.
Yeah, but still high.
But the technique was absolutely brilliant. When you saw it from behind the goal, how he set himself, he had a look at the ball, he had a look at the goal, and he had to connect with that perfectly. And what a goal it was.
Yeah, not a good season for Suarez. He doesn't look fit. He's certainly not at the level that he used to be, but that kind of...
Shows he's still got quality.
Chelsea won at Crystal Palace, but all the talk is about Romelu Lukaku, Stu, because he only touched the ball 7 times. Mm. This is seven. Mm. This is it. 7 times.
Well, I saw him against Plymouth in the FA Cup as well, and I don't think he touched the ball much more than the 7 times in that game. And it's a massive problem for him and Chelsea, because when he was at Inter, he touched the ball as much as any centre-forward in Serie A, because Antonio Conte was trying to get the ball into the front players. They were the focal point of their attacks. When he's playing for Chelsea, quite a lot of the build-up is they switch play, they try and create overloads in the wide areas and then cross the ball for him. So Thomas Tuchel was almost playing him as a box player.
Yeah,
I don't think that suits Lukaku.
No. I think he wants that.
I think he's somebody who likes to actually get himself turned, runs with the ball. Yeah. Remember when he plays Roberto Martins, he sometimes drifts wide, gets himself 1v1 against defenders and knocks it past them and runs. And that's when he's at his best.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's working well enough to get the ball, but I don't think Chelsea are working with him to enable him to show his real quality.
Yeah.
Now, Lille and Metz had a boring 0-0 draw on Saturday. But the end of the game was made interesting by an incident on the touchline, Jules.
Yeah, Frederic Antonetti, the Mets manager, who is from Corsica, hot-tempered, all of that. So that in his area and trying to put pressure on the fourth referee, and the referee was the Lille sporting director and president, who had nothing to do there. So there was a bit of a scuffle between them. Antonetti got sent off. There was allegations that they might have insulted his wife, who passed away not long ago from cancer, and that's what drove Antonetti mad. But it was the only good thing about that game, the fight, because the rest was really, really boring. Robbo, Juventus could only draw 1-1 with Torino. If you've got Vlahovic in your team and you play him 50 yards away from the opposition goal, it's not going to do much.
No, I mean, Vlahovic is a difficult one for me because he's obviously scored goals for Fiorentina, but I think he's got limitations. He can do most things, but can he do them brilliantly? Has he got one attribute that you say that makes him a top-class player? So I think it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on. Of course, Morata was playing in the game. Dybala was playing in the game. Three attacking players. Yeah. Vlahovic has to be the main striker.
Yeah.
He's not got great pace, but he's good in the air and he scores goals. He's a good finisher. So he has to play closer to the goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, there were happy scenes at the San Mamés after Athletic Bilbao won the Basque derby, Jules. But for 67 minutes, not much happened, really, did it?
Nothing, Stu. Nil-nil. Really not good. The atmosphere was fantastic, as always. Mm. This big rivalry between them. Nothing happened at all. And then between 68 and the end of the game, Athletic scored 4 goals. They were great. Iñaki Williams running behind.
Who can certainly run.
Fantastic, yeah. Ollán Sunset, who came on, made a difference. They scored 2 goals to break the deadlock, really, on set pieces, which I think was a big help, and they're very good at it. And Real Sociedad looked quite jaded, to be fair, but a huge win for Athletic Bilbao, one that you talk about in a few years to come.
And you mentioned a player there, Sunset. I've seen him play several times this season. I think I've been impressed with him, but he doesn't always get in the team. That's what surprises me.
Yeah, but I agree with you. Great, great talent. I think they've got on their hand there.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Robbo, Dortmund were humiliated in midweek in Europe by Glasgow Rangers in their playoff, and they have no Erling Haaland, So Marco Reus, remember him? Reminded us all of the talent that he has in the demolition of Gladbach on Sunday. They won 6-0 and he scored two, I think, and three assists.
But this isn't just the first game that he's played well. He's played well in recent weeks, you know, where he looks like the player he was when he first came to the fore, when he was in the German national side, when he was making all those runs. He can play in several different positions. I think that's been one of his problems. They've never really said, are you a centre forward? Are you a number 10? Are you a wide player? I think he's probably at his best when he's playing slightly wide, not out as an out-and-out winger, but when he's making those little runs, a bit like Mo Salah or a bit like Mane, making runs from outside to in. He's got good pace, he's got good technique, he understands the game, so I'm pleased to see him back in good form.
By the way, Gladbach are in trouble. You know, I think they're only 4 points above the playoff spot or the relegation spot, and I think for Adi Hütter, who did so good at Frankfurt, I think there's a lot of work to be done there, because it's a really good squad, much better than being 14th or 15th, whatever they are.
And they've been a decent side for quite some while, until this season.
Bukayo Saka and Emil Smith Rowe, I mean, if you want me to sing the song, I can. Scored to lead Arsenal to a 2-1 win against Brentford on Saturday. Stu, they are not just the future of Arsenal, right? They're also the present.
Yeah, they're outstanding players. And they give Arsenal a totally different look because, you know, Arsenal for a long while were a passing team. Now they've got players that can run with the ball and it makes them exciting to watch. It makes them dangerous. Yeah, whenever the ball breaks in midfield and Arsenal are first to it, you feel as though if it's Smith Rowe, he's going to run past two
like
or three
players. Yeah, like on the goal. His goal is like that.
Same with Saka. If the ball drops and he gets ahead of a midfield player and he takes it into his stride, he's going to cause problems. Martinelli, likewise. Odegaard's a slightly different player. But the one thing I would say is that they need maybe one or two older players, really good experienced players, good leaders that will just set them on the right path, that won't let them get carried away, because these are two players that can go all the way with Arsenal and can take them to the very top again.
No, I agree. I mean, the recruitment policy last summer was players under 23 and all the ones they got, Tomiyasu, White.
Oh, good.
Ransdell.
Excellent.
All good, under 23. Yeah. I think, let's not forget, there's also a gap to fill between 26 and 30, for example.
You look at all, you know, when Manchester United talked about all their youngsters coming through, that team that, you know, with Beckham. There was still one or two very experienced players that were great players in there. Great leaders, you know, like the Steve Bruce, the Gary Pallisters. That's probably what Arsenal needs somewhere on the field.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, Sevilla draw again in La Liga, this time at Espanyol, and they lost Martial to an injury. Not a good weekend for them, Jules.
Not a good weekend, Stu, because they, as you know, were in the title race with Real Madrid, who won against Alaves, so they had to kind of win to stay within 4 points of them. The draw means that they are 6 points, which I think, even if Real Madrid are not great, 6 points is a lot as a gap, and you lose Martial to a hamstring injury.
And I want to just mention Koundé. Did he deserve to get sent off, or do you think that
you know how he got sent off? He got sent off from reputation, because remember the red card he got against Barcelona when he threw the ball back at Alaba when Alaba was like, and I think players now they know they can get into his head and that he might kick off and do something crazy like that where he does swing his arm towards, I think it was Puado.
Puado was holding on to him and holding on to him and he's trying to fight.
Yeah,
and he didn't swing his arm at head level.
No. He just went like in his stomach.
I think he's a bit unlucky.
Yeah, but I really think that red is because of the kind of reputation he's starting to have now in La Liga of someone who can go wide a bit.
Perhaps he needs to get out of La Liga and go somewhere else.
Is there
a rumour that he might go somewhere else?
I've got a good club for him in the Premier League, for sure. They're playing blue, by the way. Mind you, Robo, we talk about Sevilla. It's not much better for Atalanta.
No.
Beaten at Fiorentina 1-0. No win in five now. Gasperini being sent off. They've got new owners, Americans investors who came and took major shareholders in the club. Mm. I think they're the owners of the Boston Celtics in the NBA. But it's not what they would have liked to see for their first game in.
They've taken over a side that they thought could go on the up. They've seen over the last 3 or 4 years play some great football, sort of outdo some of the bigger teams, do well in Europe as well.
Yeah.
It's not quite happening for Gasperini at the moment. He's got his style of play. But you always feel as though they're a side that aren't going to get to the very top. You know, they're going to have bad games.
True.
He's a bit like Bielsa in the way he wants his strategy defensively. Sometimes they go man for man in the back areas where if that doesn't come off for you, I think the strategy isn't always a great one. So that's where he's having problems. Not so much on the attacking side of the game, because they'll always score goals. They'll always create overloads. But I still worry about his philosophy defensively.
And they've had a lot of players missing. You know, no Zapata, no Muriel again for this game.
And Zapata is a leader of the line.
Exactly. And he's so strong. You know, so, well, you don't want to play against that kind of player.
And a good technical player as well. People don't give him enough credit.
So to be fair to them, they've had a lot of injuries through the whole season that can also explain why they've been a bit up and down.
Yeah. Pretty much every week we talk about him, but we have to mention him again. Nkunku is having the season of his life with Leipzig. Two more goals against Hertha. That's 22 for the season already, Jules.
Incredible. I mean, he's Paris-born and bred kid, as you know. So something that, you know, we drink in Paris or we eat in Paris that makes us so special. But two more goals, as you said. I think he's 13 in the Bundesliga for 7 assists as well. So he's not just the goals. Obviously, he did so well in the Champions League, even if they were knocked out and going to the Europa League. But I don't know what the future holds. I think Leipzig is too small for him now. I think he needs to get to a bigger club because I think he's...
Where do you think he could go?
I think he's a Pep Guardiola player so much in the sense of he can play in very different positions. He's so versatile. He can play as a lone striker, as a false nine, as a second striker. He can play well. He can even play deeper, I think, in midfield as a number eight. He's got so much talent, so much awareness, so much intelligence. And when he's in confidence like this, he needs one chance and he will score a goal. You see what I mean? He's even more clinical than he ever was before. So I just think he's an incredible talent, still so young. He can learn so much. I know we've talked a lot about him on the show, but I just think he deserves it
because he gets scoring
better
goals.
I know, exactly. He gets better and better. Stu, Burnley and Watford win this weekend. Newcastle got a good point away at West Ham. Could have maybe even got better than that, more than that. The fight against the relegation in the Premier League is really heating up. Now I have to put you on the stop. Who would go down?
I think Norwich will go down.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Norwich will go down, although they've had one or two decent results. Yeah. You can't see them getting result after result after result. Roy Hodgson coming in will stabilise Watford a little bit, and I know they got a good win at Aston Villa.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming.
I still can't see Watford getting out of it.
Okay, so that's two.
And I always look for a team, and this is a little bit of a shot in the dark. I always see a team that start to come tumbling down the table.
Yeah,
and I'm looking at Brentford.
Oh, and I knew that was coming. I don't want them. They're so nice.
I don't want them to.
Such a nice story.
But my experience, I was reserve team manager at Wimbledon, and Wimbledon were halfway up the table come Christmas. They lost 18 out of their last 19 games and got relegated.
Yeah.
Brentford just don't look like winning a game at the moment. Yeah, so I'm going to throw them into the mix as well.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Now, newly retired Sergio Aguero could be back very soon, Jules, but not on the pitch. Not really quite sure what he's going to come back with.
No, exactly. Because I wanted to, for the suspense, you know, through your questions, because he might be back with the Argentine national team.
Yeah.
But as a part of the staff, not obviously on the pitch, he cannot play anymore, which is really sad. But he's revealed this week that he might be part of the World Cup technical staff, if you want, with Lionel Scaloni and all his assistants and everybody too.
He make the training much easier? Because he didn't like training hard.
No, he didn't like training. Or maybe just to be like an older brother, if you want, and do the link between Scaloni and Messi and the rest of the squad. He's obviously a very good friend with a lot of them, having played with them very recently, won the Copa America last summer, all of that. And, you know, a bit like a general manager and, you know, but more even closer, I think, to the dressing room and to the teams. I think it's a pretty good idea, to be fair. When you go into a World Cup, you have to stay 5 or 6 weeks all together. You know,
it's a totally different environment, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think he could help for that. Frank Lampard is blowing hot and cold at Everton since he took over, Stu. 2 wins and 2 losses. One of the wins was in the FA Cup, of course. They had no shots on target on Saturday at Southampton and got well beaten.
Yeah, and when Frank Lampard took over, you know, there was the crowd didn't want one or two other managers. They wanted Frank Lampard, and there was a bit of a buzz around Goodison Park because, you know, this is the manager they wanted. There was a great atmosphere inside the stadium. But the two away performances have been really poor.
Really dire.
Really poor. Really so bad. It's now up to Frank Lampard to show that he is a good coach. I think he did an okay job at Derby. Only okay, because other managers had achieved just what he achieved at Derby, you know, getting them into the playoffs, but not quite getting them into the Premier League. He obviously did an okay job at Chelsea, but as soon as he left, they become better and better and better under Tuchel. Yeah. So I think his managerial career and coaching career is under a lot of pressure at Everton, and he'll need a good start two away performances that have been poor, two good home performances.
Yeah.
That's not good enough. You know, for Everton, they've got to start winning more games and playing more consistently. So one or two problems for them, I would imagine.
And they play City on Saturday at Goodison, so that would be a good test.
That's a big game.
Yeah, big test.
Now, we mentioned Inter already, Jules, but Milan were not much better, only managing to take a point away to Salernitana. Mm. Napoli now have a huge chance to go top of the table if they beat Cagliari on Monday. It's a great title race, isn't it?
It is. You're right, Stu. If Napoli win, we record this on Monday morning. If they win on later today, they will go level on top with Milan. And as you know, it's head-to-head in Serie A, and they beat Milan, Napoli, so they will go top. You've got a Napoli-Milan game to come in 2 weeks' time. You've got Juventus-Inter to come in a few weeks as well. So I think there's more twists to come in this title race. But to have all those teams, Inter have a game in hand to play against Bologna in midweek. Have all those teams, let's say, within 1 point of each other, because that would be the case.
So will it come down to who's got the best coach?
Maybe, potentially.
And if I gave you a choice out of the three coaches, which one would you pick?
I think Inzaghi is still young.
Yeah.
In his experience of being in a title race, obviously never been there before. He's been fighting for Champions League spot with Lazio, but never for the big prize. I think for me, Spalletti, he's the one who looks the most ready to go and win this.
He's had success elsewhere. Yeah, he's always done well wherever he's been. He hasn't always won the title, but he's been a good coach. And I think people respect him.
Because do you need now? You need that consistency, right? So you can't... Inter, no wins in three, for example. I think Milan have won two of the last five. Napoli, they won the last three in a row, I think, in the league.
Yeah.
And I think what you need now is consistency. So, okay, you might not win every single game, but you can't lose one, win one, lose one, then draw. You need a bit of that consistency in terms of result. Maybe win-win draw or something like that. Try to be as much unbeaten as you can. And for me, Napoli and Spalletti look right now the where I think they have the most chances.
That's not going to sort of be good news to Gab, is it?
You know, no.
Being a big Inter fan, you think Napoli are going to win the title.
Want Milan, yeah, exactly. One of the Milan teams to win it. I would like Napoli. And you know what? Napoli haven't won it since Maradona obviously won it.
It would be great if they did win it, wouldn't it? The atmosphere inside that stadium.
That would be special. Robert, we both love Jack Wilshere. And we are very happy for him that he found a new club, finally.
Yes. He's got to play football. You know, he's had his problems. He was one of the outstanding players, the young players that I've seen. Nearly as good as Gascoigne, at a similar age, the way he could go past people, the way he could pass the ball, the way he ran games. Obviously had injury problems, may have had one or two attitude problems, I don't know. But couldn't find his way at Bournemouth. And I think going to Aarhus, I think that's how you say
it.
Yeah,
in Denmark,
I think will be good for him. He's got to play football, he's got to play well, get his confidence, and maybe in a year's time, he'll come back to a higher level.
Yeah, good luck to him.
Now, Jules, the US women's national team beat New Zealand 5-0 in the She Believes Cup, but the game will forever be remembered for one of the goal scorers.
Yes, Stu, we've got a lot of love and sympathy for Michaela Moore, the Liverpool defender, who's also the New Zealand defender, who scored three own goals in that game against the US. And as some would say, perfect hat-trick.
Yeah, it was going to perfect.
Yeah, right foot, left foot and header. She was taken off at the end of the first half by her coach, as you would expect. I don't know if you ever scored three own goals in your career.
I scored two own goals, but never in the same game.
Jamie Carragher scored two in the Premier League, for example, in the same game.
Jonathan Walters,
as well. So a lot of our thought are for Michaela Moore, because it can't be nice at all to put that kind of performance. Shoot, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for coming on.
As always, Jules, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, my friend. We'll be back on Thursday, of course, with a new edition of the Gab and Jules Show. In the meantime, as Gab always said, love yourself, love the game, love your neighbour.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.